Good evening and welcome to another Thursday night edition of Real Monsters. I'm SK Barrett. And and join me tonight, as always, the lovely and talented Wes Hobrick.
Lovely and talented. You should see me in my Vienna dress.
I want to buy a vowel. So, how you doing?
Oh, I'm all right. How are you?
Good. We were off last week because of ye old 4th of July holiday.
We were.
That was a nice break.
Hope everybody had a good 4th. No brushes with the law. Very good. We didn't want to have to bail you out.
No bail money. Nope.
Zero. No crowdfunding either. We're not starting anything for you.
We have an interesting guy tonight.
And honestly,
I hadn't heard of this guy before. And it turns out there's a good reason, which we'll get into later on. So maybe you haven't heard of this guy, but that doesn't mean he's not a interesting, super creepy dude.
Yeah, we try to find some of them that you haven't heard of.
But let's start off with dun-dun-dun, This Week in Crime History.
This Week in Crime History, July 4th, 1975. Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper, has his first kill.
Oh.
That case would last for a little while, and I want to say he killed a total of 8, if not more. I might look it up while we're talking here.
Yorkshire, man, what the fuck, Yorkshire? You guys had more than your fair share of...
Who else was from there?
Dr. Shipman.
He is actually a July 6th entry on this list and a July 11th entry.
Oh.
The July 6th entry, Shipman kills 75-year-old Hilda Fitton. July 11th, though, he kills a 96-year-old. And this was one that he was actually charged with.
Uh-huh.
That victim, but he was not charged with Hilda Fitton's death. So.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Good old Doc Shipman. There was also the Moore murders, I think, were also Yorkshire. Maybe Manchester, though.
Yeah.
That was...
How far apart are they? I'm going to have to look that part up, too.
That was also a 70s / 80s serial killer. A couple. A younger couple who killed and left their victims out on the moors.
Oh, Peter Sutcliffe killed 13. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
So, what the fuck, Yorkshire? What's with all the killers?
Raising some
like
violent
I got
people
room to
there.
Talk.
Dubbed the Yorkshire Ripper by the press, in 1981 he was convicted of murdering 13 women and attempted murder on 7 others. Wow.
Wow.
July 8th, 1965, one of the offenders who was involved with the Great Train Robbery escapes jail. Ronnie Biggs.
I didn't know that.
Using a rope ladder, reportedly. I'm not totally sure how he fashioned that, but he managed to. Definitely. And let's see. Oh, July 5th, 1985. Whitney Bennett, the only victim to survive Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, survives her attack.
Oh, we're going to cover him. We're definitely
going to cover
him. He's
an interesting character.
Yeah.
You know what I found, I think, most interesting about him? People reported that his breath was so bad it would knock you over.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, he was a homeless guy, but... That seemed to, like, stand out to people was this guy's breath.
I worked with a guy not too long ago whose breath you could... It would curl your nostril hairs from across the table in a boardroom.
Wow. Yeah, this is one quote on his was calling it the stench of death, that it smelled that bad.
Whoa.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, that is all I have for our segment there
Okay, then.
for this week. Nice and compact.
So, Herbert Richard Baumeister.
Yes, Herb Baumeister. And if anybody listening wants to see a news clip where WISH Indianapolis actually interviewed him about a year or two before the events in question that we're going to be looking at, if anybody wants to see that clip, we put it up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/realmonsters. And another thing that I'm going to be doing as we talk about sources tonight is not just putting them in the chat, but also putting them up on our Facebook page. So they get more of a degree of permanency that way. They're there for, a while.
Very cool. Thank you for all of that good work.
Well, I know it's slow ass Chrome again. It's not putting the link out there. There we go. It's like a 30-second delay whenever I hit enter on something.
Wow.
But yeah, Herb Baumeister, born to an upper middle class family in Indianapolis in 1947.
Ah, oh, those crazy Midwestern people.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is about us, but his dad was an anesthesiologist, Dr. Herbert E. Baumeister. He died in 1986, and I actually managed to bring up his obituary.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, longtime anesthesiologist Herbert E. Baumeister dies. But I think it's important to look at any source you can get your hands on with somebody like Baumeister,
Yeah.
because there really wasn't a whole lot of cues in his childhood as to what he would turn into, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's more evident, more apparent in looking back at childhoods, and sometimes it really isn't.
You're exactly right.
I
Like
mean,
BTK really didn't have.
Bundy didn't give off clues either.
No, and neither of those guys. And I would think that Baumeister would be one who would be in that group of very social serial killers.
Yes, clearly so.
Yeah, but I'm looking at Dr. Baumeister's obit. And Dr. Herbert E. Baumeister, 66, a longtime Indianapolis anesthesiologist, died Wednesday in Methodist Hospital, 1986. Services 2 p.m. There's not really anything that sticks out when you look at his death or with the family at that time. Although looking at a couple of reports, there was one job that Herb Jr. held before he was in college, where he actually peed on his boss's desk. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people would dream about doing that, but you never hear about that being done.
There was a guy arrested at the, I think it was the Kellogg's plant for peeing on the conveyor belt at cornflakes or something like that.
Oh, I saw that. And they managed to get him years
Yeah.
after that was done, too, from videotape, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But let's see. Yeah, I was just looking again at Baumeister's profile, too, which I will also share. We actually managed to find a psychological profile of the man,
Awesome.
put together by Radford University.
What year was that done?
Hold on just a second. My slow ass Chrome is doing it again, and I will find out. So
Stupid
I'm
Chrome.
pasting it. I know. I hate it. 2005.
Okay.
Yep.
So well after the fact.
9 years, in fact, after all this was said and done. But Baumeister went to college at Indiana University in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. He studied anatomy.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
You don't really think about that being a subject of its own.
No, I mean, you really don't. You know, I would think it would have to be anatomy and physiology, you know? What does one really matter if you don't understand the other?
Yeah. Or as part of a larger curriculum for, you know, becoming a doctor or something, or a nurse, some kind of medical professional. But all on its own, studying anatomy? That's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of is.
How many sociopaths major in anatomy? I wonder.
Oh, exactly. That's antiquated too. You would think you would stepped out of a Victorian era Burke's Bodies time machine or what have you. But yeah, he went there to study that, and he actually dropped out. But this was when he met his wife, Julie Baumeister, in college.
Okay.
And she, unlike the wife of, say, Dennis Rader, BTK, or his kids, there's not really a whole lot in the way of interviews with them, but there is quite a surprising amount of interviews with Julie.
Really?
Yeah. And she seems surprisingly normal, I think. As we go along through the story, I think people will agree, but she's kind of, you know, prototypical of how you would think a normal person would react to finding out that your spouse is a serial killer. But another thing, as we'll see, is that I'm not sure how much of a killer you can say Baumeister was throughout a lot of this.
How do you mean?
Because he killed his victims in the way of asphyxiating them. It is somewhat probable that a good amount of them could have been accidental.
Oh, that killing was not the object.
Yeah, where it was incidental to what happened. For I would think at least a few. And maybe that's part of the reason you really didn't see much as a kid, because this sort of fetish, it takes a long time to develop.
Yeah, the fetish. Hold on, I got the erotophonophilia.
Erotophonophilia.
I put it up on the screen.
Oh yeah, we need a spelling of that. That is a big ass word. I'm looking for the clinical definition.
I put the definition up too.
Erotophonophilia, lust murder. Yeah. But yeah, there is some speculation that he had other fetishes as well, including a urine fetish, but I mean, we know for a fact he liked both choking himself and being choked, in fact.
Ah.
And that's where we get into one of the first players in this story who is really important as far as the whole thing goes. Mark Goodyear. He's a 30-something gay guy in Indianapolis.
All right.
And you have to remember, during the 90s, in this Midwestern city, it's still going to be very conservative as far as that thing goes.
Right. And, you know, AIDS was in, you know, wildfire mode, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially so when you look at the 80s part of this.
Right. But well, what I mean is that AIDS brought additional stigma to the gay community.
Yeah.
Which is my point.
Absolutely. I would think that would be especially prevalent in a place like Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been there a few times. I am a Midwesterner myself, although I'm not from Indiana. I'm from not horribly far, I guess. But, yeah, Mark Goodyear, he you know, being the gay guy that he has a lot of friends in the underground, the homosexual underground, for lack of a better term, in Indianapolis at that time. And one night he's out at a bar in 1994, and he meets this guy who, you know, ostensibly gives him a fake name, and it talks him up and says, "Would you like to go to my boss's mansion?" So they hop in the car. They take a somewhat long drive out north of the city to this sprawling mansion on 18 acres of wooded land out north of Indianapolis, where, you know, a deer could piss in the woods and it might make more noise than a lot of what's around there. Yeah. Because there's nothing around there. But they get to this house and they go through it down into a basement. And one of the first things that Goodyear notices are mannequins in various different poses all over the place.
Really?
So,
really?
I was wondering what your thoughts might be on that. In various states of
my
dress
first
and
reaction, my first reaction is, and the wife allowed this?
That's a really a good question. How did it escape her gaze?
Yeah.
Unless
how would you explain it?
Good question again there. Hey, Julie, there's some quirks about how she fits into this that we'll get to.
Okay.
But that's one of the first things that Goodyear notices when he's in there. And they get to the pool room. You know, this is a sprawling house, like I said, 18 acres, indoor pool, something like, I think, 5 or 6 bedrooms, maybe 3 or 4 bathrooms throughout the place. And that's one thing I didn't get with square footage, though. I might look that up as we're talking.
I think we get a sense of that. Exact square footage, I don't think is... I mean, if you run across it, great. I wouldn't go hunting it down, though.
Well... another thing that might illustrate that point, one of the photos we have is an aerial shot.
Yeah, that'll be coming up.
What is called Fox Hollow Farm. That was the name of their 18 acres and their grand mansion in the woods. But they get down to the pool, and throughout all this, this mysterious man had been talking up to Goodyear how he likes to choke and be choked in what they're doing in their sex play. So... and I thought this was telling as well. Goodyear said that the thing that he liked most about that, because Goodyear asked him, "What do you like most about it?" Baumeister's response was the eyes popping out of the head, the skin discoloring, and the lips getting full. That was his response.
That's... you mean the clues that you've gone too far are what he liked about it?
Yeah. mean, yeah.
Jesus.
But, yeah, they get down to the basement. And so they get in the pool and they start their play a little bit. And another quote from Goodyear. "He had a way with his hands. A way that once he would start it up, you would not want him to stop." So what he did, what Baumeister did, was he took a hose that they kept in the pool room, like a garden hose, wrapped it around his neck and squeezed. And then he did it to himself. He had Goodyear choke him. He collapsed into the pool and he's up with a jolt, you know, like I would assume a drug addict.
Yeah.
Taking his hit of coke. But he got so far and he was going to choke Goodyear again. And Goodyear is sensing that there's too much force here. He acts like he's out cold. And he drops into the pool.
Early.
And he said that once he opens his eyes up and looks at Baumeister, Baumeister just freaked out with all that. So, but Goodyear, he somehow that night ended up escaping Fox Hollow Farm. I'm not totally sure how, but he did. And throughout the years from 1994 to mid-1995, he said that this mysterious man, he still didn't know Baumeister's name, kept calling him and calling him and calling him. And he had a mind at this juncture, Goodyear, to report it to the police, which he did. He said he's hurting people in this area. Oh.
He didn't know how much he was hurting.
No, they didn't have a whole lot of evidence, but they did have a few in their missing persons file that were relevant to this. And so they tried to chase his story, going out through several different seasons during the year to try to find this nebulous house that Goodyear told them about. And they got nowhere for a good amount of time. And Goodyear, at that point, actually hired a private investigator to work it, too.
Really? He put his own money into it.
He did. Him and then, as more men were vanishing, the gay community around Indianapolis. But
so they didn't actually cross paths in the clubs?
You mean Goodyear and Baumeister?
Yeah.
They did in late 1995, which that's jumping ahead a little bit in the story.
Yeah, okay.
But they were in a club where Baumeister apparently didn't recognize Goodyear on the second meeting, but Goodyear recognized him.
Yeah.
And he said to a friend that was with him there, I want you to follow that guy and I want you to get his license number.
Oh.
And so they did that. They reported to the Indianapolis police, and they took that info and they actually started chasing down Herb Baumeister. In fact, the detective, upon the first meeting him, said the quote, "This is a very strange man." He's nervous. And it's important there, the context. They interviewed him at his thrift store. Herb and Julie had started a rather successful line of thrift stores in Indianapolis called Save-A-Lot.
Which is where the big house came from, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yes, that was his business and how he got all that money. I found that interesting because we have a grocery chain. A small, not even really regional chain, just like a city chain of Save-A-Lots around here.
Oh,
grocery stores, spelt the same way, too. And I would think they had been around about the same amount of time.
You don't see very often, I mean, occasionally, but not very often, serial killers who are organized enough to be successful in the community.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty rare.
It really is. Even though we've talked about a lot of them on here, it is rare.
Yeah.
I mean, again, BTK comes to mind.
BTK, you know, he did pretty good. Yeah. But he was actually, you know, he was an employee, but he was able to hold a job at least.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he was the president of his church, if you want to use that as
a
gauge.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bundy, too.
Bundy struggled with, I mean, he had a few jobs, but mostly he was a student.
Yeah.
And he got his bachelor's degree, but he struggled with law school. Well, partly because his hobby was getting in the way.
Well, this is true. It will get you, ultimately.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Baumeister owned these rather successful thrift stores. And this detective, like with her quote, "This is a very strange man," it's not like she was interviewing him like, I don't know, let's say he's a blue-collar worker on a assembly line. Mm-hmm. No, you're walking into the store and you're talking to the owner.
Right.
And she thinks this.
And she doesn't really know it fully what she's, you know, looking for yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, I had a private message actually right now. Gacy was another one that was big in his community. Owned Gacy, a successful construction business.
Yes, yes, that's who I was thinking of. Yeah.
That's another one we need to talk about soon. But yeah. But she gets in there and, you know, she talks to him. She walks away with what she can. But, of course, Baumeister, he admits to going to the bars, actually, and cruising that area. But he does not allow them to search his property. It's a hard, hard no from him when they ask for that.
By the way, generally speaking, that should be a smart person will say, get a warrant.
Oh, yeah, and that's exactly what happened. And it's also what happened when they asked Julie.
It doesn't mean you're guilty. Nobody's going to think you're guilty for saying get a warrant. You're protecting your rights. And you should always do that. Have your lawyer there and tell him to get a warrant.
Absolutely. You know, and ultimately that's a great thing as well, even if the guy is guilty, because it makes sure that they don't have the opportunity for an appeal or a repeat.
Right.
And make sure that we get it right too, that they have the right guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
yeah. It was around this time as well that Herb's son Eric was playing on their wooded area on the grounds of Fox Hollow Farm. And he and his friend, as they're out there playing in the woods, stumble across a skull and a pile of bones.
What? How old was this boy? Like
he was, I want to say, 8 years old, maybe a little bit more.
Seems right. Yeah, 8 to 10 would have been in my...
Yep. But yeah, they stumble across that, and he runs and he tells his mom.
Sloppy work.
Yeah, you know, it almost makes me wonder with a lot of these if he wasn't just burying them in a very shallow grave, and as they decomposed, they bubbled up.
Yeah, that can happen.
And you it got, could very
you,
well
you
be.
Got all this money, you've got all this land. Get a fucking backhoe, dude.
I think Kelly wants to play. She says, SK, I think I showed you my Manson action figure.
The bobblehead, I think it was, right?
Was it a bobblehead?
I think so.
Interesting. But yeah, so they come across these bones, you know, on the grounds of their manor, their palatial Indiana manor. And he runs back to mom and he tells her what he finds. And, you know, she doesn't know what to think about it. So she goes, and Herb was out of town at the time. When he came home, she said, honey, this is what he found out here. What can you tell me about this? He says, oh, that was one of Dad's articulated skeletons from med school.
Bullshit.
She believes it.
What? Why would... That's a valuable thing. Why would it be out in the field?
I have no idea, but she believed it. I guess maybe she didn't think that she had a reason to question it at the time. But after that first contact from police in 1995, I think it really rattled old Herb.
Yeah.
Because he started getting very, very nervous. And he started grabbing them a bit faster. We had another 10 that he grabbed from the gay bars of Indianapolis just in 1995.
10?
Yeah.
So he must have been sending his wife out on trips to have all this time alone at the house.
Well, you know, I'm not totally sure, but the police did say in what I found in research that she was gone on every single disappearance.
Well, she'd have to be. I don't care how big your house is. You don't go around strangling people in the swimming pool with a innocent person just wandering around who could show up at any point. That's just not done.
That's not that
you know?
That, and there's a part of me that wonders whether there was a part of Herb who said, I need to give her an alibi, too.
Hmm.
To where she, you know, is on vacation, is totally gone.
Yeah.
At the time.
So they can't come at her, the cops.
Yeah, exactly. Which they did try to do. And actually, a lot of the victims' families believe to this day that she was somehow complicit with it. Although I personally don't. And I would invite anybody who wants to look, just search Julie Baumeister, and you can find interviews with her. It's not that hard.
Okay.
To get an idea. Would we be able to cycle backwards with the pictures? One or two?
No, but I can add one specifically if you want.
I was just going to get into a little bit more with the bones.
Oh, okay.
Because there was a sort of a weird way that he went and disposed of the bodies. And it has to do with the map.
Let me... let me find that one.
But, yeah, they...
Which one did you want? The overview?
The overhead view of Fox Hollow Farm.
The wide shot that shows...
The aerial shot, yeah.
There's two of them, but do you want the close-up of the house or the wide shot of the full property?
Let's go wide shot of the property if we can.
Okay.
That picture is from the news report on Herb where they talked to him.
All right, let's switch that up. There you go.
I see the one of the gay bar.
So that'll be coming up now.
Okay. We'll watch for it. But yeah, Daddy, he threw the articulated skeleton out in the yard. Mommy believes it.
I wonder if it was one of H.H. Holmes' skeletons.
It probably was. But yeah, it's interesting. Actually, after the Baumeister family left that property, the new owners, the wife in the new owners of Fox Hollow Farm was a forensic pathologist.
No kidding. Pardon me. That was some whiskey.
Oh, you okay?
Whew, took a big drink of whiskey.
A little sip there.
A little bit going down the wrong way.
That's good. Well, I was going to say it's good that something's still stiff on you, SK. Rim shot.
Boom. Now, remember, kids, do not drink and talk at the same time.
That whole articulated skeleton thing was more than a little weird.
Very much.
But interestingly, after Julie Baumeister said you cannot search the property when Herb moved out soon after that first contact because he was growing more and more nervous, she also said, I don't want you searching it. So what the cops did on advice of a forensic pathologist was to do a helicopter ride over it with a FLIR camera with infrared to look for bodies.
So the decomposition would give off heat, kind of a
that idea. Is what he was saying. I wouldn't think it would give off that much heat, but I guess not. I mean, they were looking using that FLIR camera, but
well, it'd have to be, you know, a fairly recent body to still be getting me off heat, I would think. You don't need a dozen of them. You just need one.
Yeah. One in a position that you can catch.
One that can get you a warrant to look.
Yep. Or probable cause to look from the FLIR.
Right.
But at any rate, they didn't have that. But so Herb moves out and he takes Eric with him on a vacation to Lake Havasu in Indiana.
Okay.
And they're up there, and this is when the police, you know, they keep crawling through. And it's finally Julie Baumeister's attorney, who who tells the cops that, hey, they found bones on the property.
Oh, the lawyer tells the cops this.
Yep. They
Why?
Come in, they start digging. You know, that's a good question, but he had permission to tell them.
Okay.
So I guess she said it's okay, but when they started the dig there, they found that Herb would deposit the larger bones down on the west side of the property.
Hmm.
Toward the stream that's on the property. And then he would take the smaller bones right behind the house and burn them.
Hmm.
I'm not sure, again, why they would even do that, but right? They said that he had essentially started by putting his first murders when he was there out further and then getting progressively closer to the house as he would do it. And the profiler that I heard said, this is interesting because it shows that he's not worried about being caught. That, hey, I'm so intelligent, I'm going to flout the relationship with my wife and my kids and anybody else who might be able to look on by putting them right near the house.
Really?
So it shows how his mind operates as far as that goes.
That's not atypical, though. A lot of serial killers think they're smarter than everybody else.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's not atypical when you look at serial killers, but it is atypical when you look at, like, businessmen.
Right.
Pillars of the community, it's supposed to be atypical. But, yeah, the way that they rattled Julie's cage a bit with this was going to her and saying, your husband is accused of a homosexual homicide. That was the verbiage they used.
What the fuck difference does it make if it's what the sexual orientation is?
You got to remember, this is Indiana still in the 90s, man. They're still very conservative through there.
Yeah, but still. Also, it's worse if they're gay somehow. I mean,
I don't know, but stressing that part of it made her wince.
Oh. She didn't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Kind of imagine the Mad Magazine version of this, like, your husband killed gay people. And she's like, he was gay?
Yeah. I want to know from Becky.
Not so much the murder part, but shocked at the gay part, not the murder part.
I want to know from Becky and Kelly.
Yeah.
If your husband was accused of a homosexual murder, would it be somehow worse in your mind with the initial reaction than if you were just accused of a murder?
Yeah, good question.
This is something we ought to hear from the women on.
Yeah, it's a weird way to phrase it on the part of the cops. And maybe they did classify him separately in the criminal code. Who knows?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there really isn't that much of a distinction if you look at lust murder, whether it's, you know, right, heterosexual or homosexual. But, I don't know. But at any rate, as the pressure started getting ramped up in 1996, when they were finding more and more stuff on that property, Herb turns up after a protracted absence from his family in Toronto with a bullet in his head and a suicide note written.
What?
And that was essentially all she wrote in the eyes of the law. And his suicide note did not mention anything about what he knew they were finding.
Really?
Nothing. It was just about his family relationships and the impending bankruptcy and foreclosure on Save-A-Lot as a corporate entity.
Hmm.
So.
So. Toronto, huh?
Toronto. And they said there was some sort of corporate connection up there that Save-A-Lot owed somebody money up in Canada. And that might be why he fled there. I mean, maybe he fled there because they don't have the death penalty. I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, if you're going to go on the lam, it's find out who doesn't have extradition. Jesus.
Yeah.
That's why people go to South America.
It definitely. O'Kelly says, depends on the circumstances with our question. Was there intercourse involved before the murder? Presumably, yes.
Yeah, judging from the one guy, Chapman, who got away.
Yeah, Goodyear. Yeah.
Goodyear.
Mark Goodyear. Yeah.
Bridgestone.
Mr. Bridgestone. Yeah, presumably there was intercourse. Although that's another point, is we don't know that much about Herb's methods, whether, let's say, he drugged them when they got down there, or he drugged them at the bar. Or, you know, anything that would involve bodily fluids or drugs, because all the bodies are decomposed. All the victims are literally skeletal by the time they caught this guy.
No fresh ones.
No. No fresh ones.
Well, that's interesting.
And I mean, maybe he hid him really well on the property, but it was a very thorough search they did. Although, which we had mentioned the second owners of the house actually came across more bones on the property, too.
Oh, did they?
They did. Some that were somehow unfound. But one interesting part of that, they actually believe the house is haunted. Fox Hollow Farm.
Really? The scientist, huh?
Yeah, she's a scientist, and she believes that. Wow. The way that they found that bone, I believe it was a femur that they found. She had seen somebody walking in their yard from the house. She said it was a guy wearing a red polo shirt, and when she looked, he had no legs.
Oh, there we go. There's
so she runs out there. Yeah. She runs out there, she follows where this guy was going, and she finds a femur. Just out, you know, on the surface like that.
We have another question from Kelly. Was he killing them because he had latent tendencies himself, or was he threatened by homosexuals for some reason?
Oh, I don't think his tendencies were so latent.
Yeah, they weren't latent much at all.
Yeah, he tried to hide them.
Yes.
But they were not latent by any stretch.
He went to clubs.
But yeah, that second part of it, or was he threatened by homosexuals? I don't know. Honestly, I subscribe to the idea that this fetish of his went further and further and further and further. When he accidentally kills a guy by applying too much force one time, mm-hmm. it gets to where he accidentally kills maybe a couple more. And then it gets to the point in his brain where he knows he has to kill them to get off. It escalates, just like any other killer.
Well, and you know, the escalating rush, the adrenaline rush, right, becomes more and more difficult to reproduce.
Absolutely. Just like a heroin addict.
Well, in a non-drug context, have you ever been skydiving?
No, I wouldn't do that. I'm afraid of heights. So... Yeah, I'll leave that up to the people who would rather do that and risk their lives.
So I've been twice, and the adrenaline rush from the first jump lasted like 12 hours.
Yeah,
And in just raging adrenaline for 12 hours. Unbelievable. It was astonishing. And
Wow.
I went again like 2 years later, and it was, a quarter of that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I do have a point of reference with something like that. Tattoos. They're addictive in kind of the same way. You
Yeah.
get the endorphins from it.
Right.
And that's why, people get more, like myself. But yeah, I'll leave the skydiving to people who would rather be jumping out of a plane.
But my,
I kind of
yeah.
subscribe to the Joe Rogan theory of that, where, I wasn't meant to be on top of Mount Everest, so I'm not going to go there. Likewise, I wasn't meant to be in a plane, so I'm not going to jump from it. But yeah, there's.
It was astonishing how much less of an adrenaline rush there was the second time. And one of my friends growing up in high school was a competitive skydiver,
Oh, wow.
and he ended up quitting because of he kept taking bigger and bigger risks trying to get that thrill that it scared him how far he was willing to go to get that rush.
Oh,
And
dang.
so he ended up quitting completely.
Wow. Well, yeah, that's definitely a model for what we have here, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, where he just progressed to that point where he knew he had to kill to get off. Now, where exactly that cutoff occurred, we can't be sure. But I think it's kind of unquestionable that he did get there. But he was also tied to 12 more murders on the I-70 corridor from Indianapolis to Dayton, Ohio.
And
12
what
more.
really? And what was the time frame for those? Was it concurrent with?
1980 to 1991.
So it was concurrent with the ones that were at the house.
Yeah, more or less.
So, because this brings up, and one of my questions was, the fact that there were so many, that the bodies at the house were, fully decomposed, maybe he was killing elsewhere.
That very well could be. Julie Baumeister said, in reference to the 12 on the I-70 corridor,
Yeah.
that Baumeister did do more than a few business trips to Dayton for Save-A-Lot. So that is the speculation that he strangled all 12 of them and dumped them on the highway.
Wow.
Which I don't know if you've ever been on I-70. I actually live maybe 100 miles north of where it is at St. Louis, which is a very busy interchange.
Let me check.
It's a very busy highway throughout its entire stretch.
Is it?
Yep. And through here, it goes through all of Missouri from St. Louis to Columbia at about the halfway point to Kansas City.
I have been on looking at the map. I was just wanted to make sure. I have been on I-70, but way out west,
Oh,
Utah and
yeah.
Colorado.
Oh, I didn't know it stretched that far.
Yeah, I think it. If I'm following over here, I think it goes all the way to California.
Oh, wow. Then hooks up with one of the other interchanges, I assume. Interesting. They would have to be Northern California, I would
Oh
think.
no, it dead ends in Utah.
Oh.
Or is this Nevada? Where are we? No, Utah. Southern Utah, dead ends.
I imagine, how far east does it go? Does that map say that?
I'm scrolling. Keep those doggies
Oh, all the
scrolling
way
right.
to Maryland.
Yeah.
Yeah, it dead ends in
Dead in
Utah and then all
Baltimore.
the way to Maryland. But those killings were dubbed the I-70 stranglings. And the killer, the I-70 Strangler. They're pretty sure it's Baumeister, but they can never be totally sure. So
Yeah.
those will remain cold, as it were.
But generally attributed to him.
Yeah. And they're maybe, I don't know, 70% on it. If I had to put a number to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that story with the second family is really interesting. They have a guest house at Fox Hollow Farm that the colleague of the husband who moved in there, he was like a 20-something guy who worked with this guy at a car lot in Indianapolis and was having a hell of a time with his commute. So this guy says, well, why don't you just stay in our guest house? So he moves in there. And allegedly one night in there, he saw one of Baumeister's victims.
Oh,
when there was really? This fully clothed guy who ran at him just screaming and ransacked the place and then disappeared.
Whoa.
If you believe his story. And this same guy, when he had friends over and they were in the pool, also felt hands on him when he was in there. Like strangling him underwater.
Wow.
So, make what you will of that. I'm not sure what people think on ghosts, and we try to, you know, generally avoid that as the meat of what we talk about here.
Right. If it doesn't got meat, we don't talk about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm waiting for a sign when it comes to ghosts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if I ran across a ghost, then I'd be cool.
You know, but I believe
until that happens, I'm kind of a Noah.
You know, I believe that I saw one when I was at a old insane asylum in Illinois, Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
And me and it was a several acre property through there. And myself and a friend drove through it when we were at SIU Carbondale, Southern Illinois University.
Yeah.
About maybe an hour to the south of us. Drove through there and in an old carriage house on the grounds, I saw a woman in black Victorian mourning garb lighting an oil lamp at the top. This was at night when there's nobody else on the property.
Whoa.
But us. So I have no other explanation for that, for what I saw.
Yeah. See, I grew up literally across the fence from a 1 acre, very old boneyard graveyard. Not a cemetery, a graveyard. And
well,
I spent a lot of hours at night looking out the window, trying to see something.
Yeah.
Never did.
Well,
I mean, I saw kids vandalizing, but I didn't see any ghosts.
Yeah. And, you know, even though I do believe in them, I believe that we should literally exhaust every other possibility before you go to that.
Right.
Before you go to that as a default. Because, you know, when you look at supernatural, it really just means something that science doesn't know yet.
Unidentified walking object.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you can bring it into that scientific sphere, by definition, it becomes not supernatural anymore. Right. But, yeah, that is Herb, you know, Baumeister.
Yeah. Strange bird.
You know, I'm going to have to do a little bit more digging on the pea thing. That was another podcast that made that claim that he had a pee fetish. And from what I can see, they only had one psychologist who was talking about it. Got to be more sources out there somewhere. Because, well, you know, like I said, he is from my neck of the woods,
right,
more or less.
Right. Well, we've done a few Midwestern serial killer types.
BTK, Villisca,
Gein.
Another. Yeah, Ed Gein. Gacy, when we do that.
Yeah.
Would be another. Dahmer, too. Milwaukee.
Yeah. He's definitely on the list.
Yep. He was a strange one, man. There's yeah. nobody with a pathology like his. Hang gliding, huh?
Hang gliding. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, as far as tats go, I need to get my arms finished. Full sleeves.
Really? You gonna do that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't started yet. I am a blank slate.
You should consider it.
I
just
have
do it when it's well
it.
Thought out.
I have considered it, and I just have never come across an image that I thought that I would always want to have.
Well, there you go. I mean, with mine, basically all of them are Masonic symbols.
Ah.
Besides the St. Michael that I have on my right arm. Oh, and then the Gadsden flag on my left arm.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. Yes, the Midwest is well represented by serial killers, Paul.
Definitely.
We're still behind the Pacific Northwest, though, I think.
Are you? Maybe.
Or are we neck and neck? We might be neck and neck.
Yeah. We've had our... For as sparsely populated as the region is compared to the rest of the country, or many areas of the country, we do okay.
Yeah, that's true. You guys definitely do. I still say a big part of that is the foliage out there.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, my brother is out that way right now. In Montana, actually.
Oh,
he said he's at the most northwest point of Montana for a wedding right now.
No
said
kidding.
It was about 5 hours from Seattle and Portland.
Where, oh, where Great Falls, Eureka?
I can't remember what he said the town was, but he said it was like right up there at that point in Montana, where Canada and, you know, that
Bonner's
little sliver
Ferry.
Of Idaho.
Bonner's Ferry, I bet that's it.
It probably is it.
Oh, wait,
Hope
that's in
that.
Idaho.
Oh, yeah, right over the border.
Yeah.
Is that where all the white supremacist militia people live?
No.
Just a stereotype, huh?
Yeah, that's a
Ruby Ridge and all.
That's a little farther south.
Ah. And that's like one of the first things on TV that I remember. Ruby Ridge.
Yeah, another case of cops gone wild.
Yep. It was just wrong, man, on so many levels. I think I was like 2 or 3 when it happened. In our opinion, which region has the most infamous serial killers? Midwest or Pacific Northwest?
Ooh.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough call. I mean, you know, we've
Ed
got
Gein.
We got Bundy, and he's kind of, you know, top tier as far as infamy, as far as notoriety.
When you parse it out that way, it makes sense. Because Ed Gein, he wasn't so much infamous as he was just crazy.
Yeah, and he did serve as a, you know, inspiration for a lot of fictional killers.
That's true. Psycho all the way up to Michael Myers and Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs.
Yep. You said Psycho.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Bloch wrote his novel about Gein, more or less. So yeah, that's a tough question, but I think if you define it as infamy, it would have to be Pacific Northwest because of Bundy.
And Green River Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we've had our fair share more than.
Heat and humidity makes people angry, but there's so much land in the Midwest to bury the bodies. Yeah, there's a lot when you look at farmland there, Kelly. That is
Yeah.
definitely true, but those farmers in this area, in this neck of the woods, they really know how to survey their property and kick people off of it when they catch them.
And
I'll say that.
out here in the Northwest, you don't need to go far to you don't even have to bury them. Jesus, you can go 10 feet off any street practically and dump a body and nobody'd see it for 10 years.
This is true. Yeah, down here you would definitely have to bury him. But like I said, you don't want to be on the business end of an irate farmer with a double
No.
barrel shotgun.
No. Nope.
I went to high school with plenty of them, town of 400. So.
All right, Herb Baumeister.
The homosexual homicide maniac.
Yeah. And
Still.
the reason I mentioned at the beginning, the reason most people have not heard of this guy is because he never stood trial. So
Yep.
there was no opportunity for the press to go nutso over this guy.
Yeah, and literally nothing to examine as a psychological postmortem.
Yep.
You know, all you have is what? Acquaintances and family and people like Mark Goodyear have to say.
Right.
So, even back then, when he was calling Goodyear repeatedly over that year that I mentioned, the cops knew about it and they put a trace on his phone, but they couldn't get it on the other end because he was using a cell phone.
Oh,
And with the
really?
technology being so early, they
Yeah.
couldn't trace it back.
Right.
So I don't know how many people that had cell phones in 1995. I can think
Me?
of maybe two. Yeah.
It was one of those big old gray AT&T, no, Motorola flip phones. Those big blocky things.
Yeah, the flip phones.
Yeah.
Those huge ones where you had to pull the antenna out.
Yep.
My great
One,
grandfather
yeah.
had one in his Lincoln car phone.
Yeah, one line of LED readout.
Yep. Just punching in the numbers. But man, those things would last a long time. Unlike the smartphones of today.
Yep.
Yeah, Dahmer was pretty infamous. He was.
Yeah.
I don't know though, he didn't go across several states the way Bundy did. He didn't go,
No.
Dahmer didn't go and actively raise terror the way Bundy did.
Bundy terrorized entire states.
Oh yeah, entire geographic areas.
Yeah. I mean, literally terrorized, changed entire populations and how they behave. So, not many people can say that.
That's very true. And while Gein did that in a roundabout way, that's just it. He did it in a roundabout way through fictional
Right.
characters that were just based on him.
Yeah.
You should do a show where you have a guest and you all come up with the perfect way to kill and hide a body. Huh.
Yeah. That would be an
Yep.
interesting show.
It would be. We should do
We
that.
could discuss the pros and cons of various approaches that have been tried and
Yeah.
could theoretically be tried.
This is true. But where was Baumeister at? Baumeister was in Indianapolis, Paul.
Yeah.
Indianapolis and the surrounding suburbs.
And he committed suicide in Toronto while he was
On the lam.
on the lam.
Yep. Bullet in his head. His last words were, "I'm gonna make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and go to sleep." No joke.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that wraps it up for tonight. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Real Monsters. Hit the like button.
Subscribe to the channel.
Subscribe to the channel. Share the links out. Come back next week.
And head over to our Facebook page for more on Baumeister.
Yeah,
absolutely. I shared the sources there, too.
And, tell all your friends.
Facebook.com/RealMonstersPodcast.
See, all
give us a like over there, too.
All we need is for you to get five of your friends to subscribe, and then get each of those five to get five friends to subscribe, and get each... the multi-level podcast.
We are the MLP, proudly. That's not a pyramid scheme.
No,
it's a plum, if you spell it backwards. I forgot which MLM used that. They said that we are the dimmer app, the pyramid scheme backwards.
Oh, Jesus. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night, all.